Imagine a cataclysm that is just so perfectly choreographed, so like meticulously scheduled that the end of the world isn't some random accident or, a sudden cosmic disaster.
Right, it's not a giant meteor just hitting out of nowhere.
Exactly. Instead, it's a machine. A machine with these precise countdowns, scheduled treaties, and a predetermined sequence of events that are basically designed to systematically dismantle the Earth as we know it.
It is a totally fascinating paradigm. I mean, we're so used to looking back at history, right? Trying to see how the pieces fit together after the fact. But the apocalyptic genre, it just completely flips that.
It hands you the final blueprint.
Yeah, hands you the blueprint and asks you to look forward into this landscape that is dense, highly structured, and just filled with ancient symbols.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. This one is entirely for you because we know you've been wanting to map out one of the most complex, debated, and layered texts in human history, which is the Book of Revelation.
Oh, it is a daunting puzzle.
It really is. Today, we are taking this massive puzzle and trying to put the pieces together so we can actually look at the picture on the box. Our source for this is a breakdown titled Timeline for the Book of Revelation, A Thimbleful of Theology for Daily Living.
Which is such a great title.
Yeah, it's written by Randall Johnson, who's a pastor with theological degrees from Dallas and Reformed Theological Seminaries. And he's been studying this specific timeline since, I think, 1979.
Wow, so decades of work. But you know, right out of the gate here, we really should set some ground rules for our exploration today.
Absolutely. Good call.
Because you and I are stepping into a framework of deeply held religious and prophetic beliefs. And we want to be clear that we're not here to take a theological side or, you know, endorse a specific dogma or even debate the validity of these end times viewpoints.
Right. We are acting entirely as objective observers for you.
Exactly. We're going to impartially break down the exact chronological architecture of this apocalypse, just as Pastor Johnson has mapped it out, so we can understand the mechanics and the logic of how this specific timeline operates.
Okay, so let's unpack this blueprint, because surprisingly, a timeline about the end of the universe actually starts firmly in the past.
Right, it anchors us first.
Yeah, circa AD 90. So the Apostle John is exiled on the island of Patmos. He's essentially a political prisoner of the Roman Empire at this point. And according to the text, he experiences this sudden, just overwhelming vision. He encounters the glorified Christ.
And we should probably clarify that term, right? Because we're not talking about the historical teacher wandering around Galilee here.
No, not at all. The text describes this radically transformed, radiant figure who possesses absolute, terrifying cosmic authority. And this figure gives John a very specific command, which is to write down a series of messages.
But they aren't global messages to start with, which is interesting.
Right. They are hyperlocal.
Yeah, the entire apocalyptic structure here is built on a very grounded, almost pastoral foundation. So the first major event on Pastor Johnson's timeline is Christ delivering specific letters to seven literal churches located in ancient Asia Minor.
Which is modern-day Turkey, right?
Exactly. You find this in Revelation chapters 2 and 3. And there's a reason it starts this way. You see, the number 7 in Hebrew literary tradition represents completeness or divine perfection.
Okay.
So, by addressing these seven specific congregations, the text is essentially offering encouragement, correction, and warning that applies to the complete universal church. It establishes the immediate first century reality of believers living under Roman oppression before it zooms out to the cosmic scale.
It sets the stage. But then, right after those localized messages in AD 90, the text does something wild.
It really does.
The timeline hits this massive, centuries-long pause button. It's like reading a gripping novel, and right after chapter 3, you turn the page and hit a blank page that just says 2,000 years later.
Like a sci-fi time jump.
Yes. Pastor Johnson's timeline calls this the Great Interval.
And it is a profound structural shift. This great interval is the era that, according to this framework, humanity is currently living in. It's known as the Church Age, unfolding right between the era of the original apostles and the final apocalyptic sequence.
We're basically in the holding pattern.
Exactly. And what's really crucial to notice here is that after chapter 3, the word church virtually disappears from the narrative of events happening on Earth.
Right, because the timeline dictates that this 2,000-year interval ends abruptly with an event called the rapture.
Yes, the rapture.
The source notes this isn't actually explicitly detailed in the Book of Revelation itself, but it's pulled from a letter written by the Apostle Paul 1 Thessalonians. The concept is that the entire global church is suddenly removed from the earth before any of the incoming judgments even begin.
They are just taken out of the equation.
Completely. And instantly, the camera angle of the text shifts. John is transported up into heaven's throne room. He sees God Almighty holding a sealed scroll of judgment, and only the Lamb representing Christ is worthy to break the seals.
It's highly cinematic.
It is. But hold on, I need to challenge the logic of this sequence for a second. If the rapture just extracted millions of believers from the planet before the chaos even starts, who is actually left on Earth to experience the rest of this timeline? I mean, why empty the stage right before the main event?
That is the exact right question to ask, really, because it reveals the underlying architectural purpose of the rapture in this specific theology. It's not just a rescue mission.
Okay, what is it then?
It's a narrative reset. By removing the global church, the geopolitical and spiritual vacuum on Earth is absolute. The focus of the timeline violently shifts back to where it began thousands of years prior.
To Israel.
Specifically to the nation of Israel, yes, and generally to a fractured, terrified global population. I mean, think about the infrastructural collapse and the psychological terror of millions of people just vanishing. Oh, it would be pure chaos.
Right. It creates an environment of ultimate desperation.
Yeah.
The world is primed, essentially begging for anyone who can offer stability and order.
Which opens the door for the acceleration phase. Because the 2,000-year holding pattern is over, and we drop into this high-speed, highly specific countdown. The timeline identifies this next phase as Daniel's final prophetic week.
Yes.
And we need to define our terms here, because when we say week, we aren't talking about 7 days, are we?
No, exactly. In ancient Hebrew prophetic literature, specifically in the book of Daniel, a week, or a heptad, is a unit of 7 years.
Okay.
So the prophetic clock, which has been paused for two millennia during the Great Interval, suddenly starts ticking again on a definitive 7-year countdown to the end of history.
And that clock is triggered by a political maneuver, because out of the global chaos left by the rapture, a figure emerges. The timeline calls him the Beast.
Also known as the Antichrist, or the Man of Sin. Right. He steps up and engineers this 7-year diplomatic treaty with Israel. And this treaty is so robust, so effective, it actually allows for the rebuilding of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. So we have this moment of what looks like brilliant geopolitical diplomacy.
It's the ultimate illusion of human achievement. On the surface, the Beast has solved centuries of intractable Middle Eastern conflict and brought order to a post-rapture world.
He looks like the savior.
He absolutely does.
But I'm looking at the timeline here, and this treaty is destined to fail. Exactly at the midpoint, so 3.5 years, and everything fractures. The timeline enters the Great Tribulation.
Things get very dark very quickly.
Yeah, the Beast completely drops the Peacemaker Act. He breaks the covenant, walks into that newly rebuilt temple, defiles it by demanding to be worshipped as a god, and launches this massive campaign of global slaughter. But my question is, why the sudden pivot? How do we get from a diplomatic masterstroke to a tyrannical meltdown precisely at the 3.5-year mark?
Well, to understand the sudden collapse of that treaty, you really have to look at the cause and effect happening across multiple dimensions. According to Revelation 12, the catalyst isn't human politics.
It's not just a bad negotiation.
No, it is a literal war in heaven. Michael and the angels fight against Satan, and Satan is definitively defeated and cast out of the heavenly realm. He's violently thrown down to the physical earth.
Wait, so the political breakdown on earth is just collateral damage from a cosmic eviction?
Exactly. And the text explicitly notes a crucial psychological detail here. Satan knows his time is incredibly short. He knows he has exactly 3.5 years left.
Because the countdown is already halfway done.
Right. And this triggers an unparalleled desperate fury. He essentially possesses or completely empowers the Beast to attempt total global domination. And this is also where the false prophet enters the timeline.
Right, the false prophet. Let's define that role for you listening, because he seems to function essentially as the Beast's minister of propaganda.
That's a perfect way to describe it, actually. If the Beast is the political and military authority, the false prophet is the religious and economic enforcer.
He's the one managing the logistics of the tyranny.
Yes. He creates a system where no one can buy or sell anything without a specific mark of loyalty to the Beast. So the treaty breaks because the spiritual dynamics behind the scenes have aggressively shifted. The spiritual conflict has breached the physical world, plunging the earth into an autocratic nightmare.
Okay, so the earth is completely locked down by this hostile, multidimensional takeover. But the timeline shows that God doesn't just sit back.
No, not at all.
There is a deeply calculated parallel response during these final 3.5 years, and it basically operates on two tracks: highly targeted divine protection and escalating systematic devastation.
Let's start with the protection.
Yeah, let's do that. Because in the midst of the beast's total war, we see the deployment of these specific immune agents. The timeline highlights two distinct groups. First, the 144,000. These are described as sealed Jewish evangelists. And again, the map here is deliberate. 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes of Israel. They receive absolute divine protection.
Which is key here.
Right. They are sealed, meaning they are physically untouchable by the surrounding plagues, and they spread their message globally, saving multitudes. Then you have the two witnesses. These are two incredibly powerful prophets stationed directly in Jerusalem.
And their powers are fascinating.
Oh, they're wild. They breathe fire, they can shut up the sky so it doesn't rain, and they testify for precisely 1,260 days, which, if you do the math on a 360-day ancient prophetic calendar, is exactly 3.5 years.
Yeah, their timeline perfectly mirrors the beast's reign of terror.
I picture these groups almost like deep sea divers walking along the ocean floor. The pressure around them is enough to crush anything else instantly, but they are completely insulated by their suits.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Thanks. They have this plot armor, basically, so they can execute their mission while the rest of the planet is being subjected to the second track, which is the judgments.
And those judgments are where the timeline's architecture becomes incredibly rigid and terrifying. We see three distinct waves: the seals, the trumpets, and the bowls.
Right, and it starts with the opening of the seals. This is where we get the famous imagery of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You know, conquest, war, famine, and death.
The classics.
Yeah. Then it escalates to the trumpets. These are catastrophic ecological plagues that specifically affect one-third of the earth.
It's very precise, one-third.
Right, one-third of the trees burn up, one-third of the oceans turn to blood. And finally, the bowl judgments. These are described as the final seven vials of God's complete, undiluted wrath.
And the restraint is gone here.
Completely. The oceans don't just partially die, they turn completely to coagulated blood. Darkness covers the beast's kingdom. But what I want to understand is the why behind this specific structure. Why this escalating series of sevens?
Well, it goes back to that Hebrew literary device of seven representing completion. This isn't random chaotic destruction, even though it sounds like it.
It sounds chaotic.
It does,
yeah.
But it's actually a controlled, calculated demolition of the world order. Think of it like a targeted immune response in a biological system.
Okay, walk me through that.
Sure. So the seals represent the initial breaking open of the conflict, humanity's own sinful systems essentially collapsing on themselves. Mm. Then the trumpets serve as this blaring, severe warning, striking a fraction of the earth to force repentance. But by the time we reach the bowls, the time for warning is totally over.
The countdown is done.
Exactly. The progression from partial judgment to total judgment is designed to systematically dismantle every single pillar of the beast's empire.
And the most vital pillar of that empire seems to be economic. The timeline explicitly outlines the fall of Babylon during this bowl judgment phase. Now, Babylon here isn't just an ancient city in the desert, right?
No, not in this context.
The text describes it as the great global commercial system. It's the cargo ships, the luxury goods, the supply chains, the entire economic infrastructure that the beast has used to control humanity.
Which is brilliant strategy, honestly. If you want to defeat an entrenched global dictator, you don't just attack his armies. You completely obliterate his supply chain and his wealth.
You bankrupt them.
Exactly. The destruction of Babylon means the systems that unrepentant humanity relied upon for luxury, security, and power are entirely vaporized. The beast has no economy left to govern.
So the economy is gone. The ecology is ruined. The beast is totally cornered and has absolutely nothing left to lose, which triggers the geographical bottleneck of the entire timeline. The Battle of Armageddon.
The final stand.
Right. All the remaining armies of the earth are drawn to this single location in the Middle East for one desperate final standoff against heaven itself.
The tension of the entire 7-year countdown, the culmination of all human rebellion, converges on this one literal battlefield.
And this brings us to the climax. The sky splits open. The second coming. The timeline states that Jesus Christ returns, descending from heaven accompanied by the armies of the saints.
And what's amazing is it's not even a prolonged war.
No. Christ defeats the gathered armies with the mere word of his mouth, just instantly. The beast and the false prophet are captured and cast alive directly into the lake of fire. And Satan, He is bound, chained and locked away in a bottomless pit. The war is definitively over.
The Earth is finally purged of its architects of misery.
And that launches us into a radically different era, the Millennial Kingdom. Jesus establishes his throne in Jerusalem and rules the globe for exactly 1,000 years. The text describes an era of unprecedented ecological restoration, perfect justice, and absolute peace. No war, no famine, no demonic deception.
It is the ultimate vindication of the timeline. For 1,000 years, the Earth operates exactly as it was originally designed to function. It fulfills every ancient prophecy made to the nation of Israel about a coming era of divine order.
Yeah, there's a catch.
There is always a catch.
And honestly, this is the part of the timeline that always makes me stop in my tracks. After 1,000 years of perfect peace, with Christ ruling directly and humanity just completely flourishing, the lock on the pit is opened. Satan is released.
It sounds counterintuitive.
It really does. He immediately goes out to the nations, deceives a massive number of people, gathers one last army, and marches on Jerusalem. He is, of course, instantly defeated by fire from heaven and finally cast into the lake of fire forever. But I really have to push back here. Why?
That's a big question.
Yeah, why let the virus back into the system? You have a millennium of utopia. Why on earth would the architect of this timeline introduce a massive vulnerability right before the end?
It is arguably the most philosophically profound moment in the entire framework. And it all comes down to the nature of free will and the absolute necessity of tested allegiance.
Okay, unpack that for me.
Think about the demographics of this millennial kingdom. For 1,000 years, generations of humans are born and live in a literal perfect environment. They experience perfect justice and undeniable prosperity.
All they know.
Exactly. They have only ever known a world where obedience is the only visible option and where the presence of God is undeniable. They have never been exposed to the alternative. They have never had their allegiance tested by the presence of a deceptive alternative.
Okay. So their compliance might just be circumstantial. They're behaving because they have to, or maybe because it's easy, not because they've actually chosen loyalty in the face of real temptation.
Precisely. Releasing Satan isn't an accident. It is the final diagnostic test of humanity.
A diagnostic test.
Right. It forces a definitive choice. It draws out the hidden, lingering rebellion within the human heart that was masked by the perfect environment of the millennium. This final rebellion exposes those who outwardly complied but inwardly dissented.
It gathers all the remaining corrupt code in the system and quarantines it in one place so it can be deleted permanently.
Exactly. Because this decisive purge is the mandatory prerequisite for what happens next, which is the Great White Throne Judgment.
The final judgment.
Yes. The timeline dictates that all the dead throughout history who rejected God are resurrected to face this final, ultimate tribunal. They are judged according to their deeds and ultimately cast into the lake of fire. The release of Satan and this final judgment are the mechanisms that wipe the cosmic slate flawlessly clean.
You cannot move forward until every trace of the old infection is eradicated. Because the final destination on Pastor Johnson's timeline is eternity.
A completely new start.
Right. The first heaven and the first earth pass away.
Oh, yeah.
God creates a totally new heaven and a totally new earth. The New Jerusalem descends. The timeline rests on the promise of Revelation 21.5. Behold, I am making all things new. And you're right, you can't make all things completely new if there's even a microscopic fraction of rebellion or sorrow carried over from the old world. Death, mourning, crying, and pain are permanently exiled.
It is the absolute irrevocable resolution of the grand narrative.
It really is a staggering architectural feat to behold. We have journeyed through Pastor Johnson's framework, starting from those targeted local letters to 7 Roman-era churches in AD 90.
Setting the foundation.
Yeah. And then we explored the vast 2,000-year holding pattern of the Great Interval. We analyzed the intricate mechanics of a 7-year tribulation, from deceptive geopolitical treaties to the cosmic eviction of Satan, the deployment of immune witnesses, and the calculated escalating demolition of the global economy through the seals, trumpets, and bowls.
The whole countdown.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw the climax at Armageddon, a 1,000-year utopian kingdom, a final necessary diagnostic test of human free will, and the ultimate dawn of a flawless eternal reality.
And, you know, when you step back from the details, you really realize why this timeline is so culturally vital.
Absolutely.
Because even outside of theology, this chronological mapping has embedded itself deep into our collective consciousness. It has informed centuries of literature, political theory, and art. Understanding the specific framework, how the rapture creates a vacuum, how Babylon represents commercial greed, how Armageddon is the ultimate bottleneck, It really gives you a profound cipher for reading Western history and cultural anxieties.
It really is like finally finding the image on the puzzle box. Suddenly, all these dramatic phrases you hear in pop culture just snap into this deeply logical, causally linked engine.
It reveals the profound human desire for history to have a definitive moral conclusion.
It absolutely does. And as we finish our deep dive today, I want to leave you with a final thought to go on. We started by looking at this timeline as a predetermined machine, a doomsday clock with a highly specific itinerary.
Right.
If you were to adopt this exact lens, if you truly believe that human history is not a series of random accidents, but a meticulously scheduled sequence of cosmic conflicts and scheduled resolutions that will suddenly click into gear, how might that perspective radically alter the decisions you make, the things you value, and the way you live your life today, right now, in the middle of this great interval?